right, I'd like to call the May 16th Pension Committee meeting to order. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the February 18th, 2024 minutes. Is there any questions or concerns about those minutes?
No.
Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Next item is public comment. Ms. Albright, is there anybody online for public?
There's no one online.
Thank you. All right, moving right along. Now we'll get into the performance reports for the pension and OPEB, and we have Mr. Wing here, and I'll turn it over to him.
All right, great, thanks. Morning, everyone. So
Morning.
Bear with me for a quick minute here. I'll share my screen. Can everybody see that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great, great. As I mentioned a minute ago before we started, it should be a relatively quick disc here from our end. We have the Q1 performance report, which we'll dive into here in just a second. And then we have the April performance update, but as always, I'll try to weave in some commentary throughout the report and the update around, you know, what's been happening more particularly in May. For those of you following markets, it's been quite a different environment than we saw in April, and as always, you know, how we're thinking about the outlook from an economic and market perspective, how it's influencing some of the decisions we're making across the respective funds. So with that said, we'll start as we always do with the market environment, quick overview from an economic and market perspective, some context for how and why the two funds performed the way they did, and how and why some of the underlying managers performed the way they did. We're at a high level with the U.S. economy and then get a little bit more granular. But as we note in the first bullet point here, economic growth continued to decelerate. In Q1, real GDP increased at an annual rate of just 1.6%. And you can see the decel here in the top right chart, notably from Q3 of last year, the step down into Q4 and the Q1, whereas the striped bar economist estimates for the remainder of the calendar year. Now, even though we saw 1.6%, which was quite a bit below expectation, when you peel back the layers a little bit, we note that a couple of factors were big detractors from that number, namely net exports or trade and inventory investments. And in aggregate, they detracted about 1.2% from that headline number. And when you look at other factors like household spending and business investment, they were actually quite in Q1, you know, reasonably comparable to what we saw in Q4. So we think that headline number certainly masks a little bit of buying strength that we saw in Q1, into account what the detraction was from net exports and inventory. It really continues the thing that we've talked about a lot over the past 3, 4, 5 quarters, namely that the economy has been much resilient in the face of all the Fed tightening than history would suggest. And the factors that have driven that resilience we've talked about before, so I won't belabor them again this morning, but it really comes down to lower interest rate sensitivity among households and questions that we talk about in this middle bullet point, specifically around the fact that a lot of household debt is in fixed rate mortgages, and corporations, particularly larger ones, took the opportunity 2, 3 years ago when rates were much lower to refinance and extend and issue new debt. So in other words, rates don't particularly matter until you refinance or issue new debt. At that point, it impacts cash flow, but we just haven't seen that given the amount of fixed rate debt in the U.S. economy. And the second point is about fiscal policy, namely the federal government deficit. We had a chart on that in the last quarterly market environment. Talk about it down here, but quite frankly, the deficit right now is unlike anything we've seen in history without the U.S. being in a direct conflict or in a recession. And that's certainly been acknowledged by a lot of economists and market participants, the role that it's playing, but we think it's a little bit underappreciated, the deficit spending itself, but specifically the support it's giving to households and businesses aside. And specifically for households, we actually saw transfer payments from the federal government to households spike rather notably in Q1, which in turn supported consumer spending. Now, on the other side of the equation, as I move to the next page here, where the data didn't necessarily come in quite good, yesterday's report notwithstanding, was around inflation. So of the many inflation reports we get, whether it be the Consumer Price Index report, the Producer Price Index report, Personal Consumption Expenditures report, there's a myriad of reports and a myriad of measures in those reports. The broad narrative or theme was that the data came in worse than expected throughout the quarter. Now, as we'll see in just a minute, equities took that relatively in stride, but it did put some upward pressure on interest rates and in turn downward pressure on bond prices. Factors driving the worse than expected inflation, we see wage growth here in the top right. You know, it has decelerated, but still remains high compared to the average over the past, we'll call it, 25, 30 years shown in this dotted line. We saw higher commodity prices, particularly within energy. But now moving forward, it was interesting in yesterday's report, came in, in line or probably a little bit below expectations for the first time in a while, and the market rallied pretty hard on the data itself. However, a lot of the disinflation that we've seen over the past, call it 12, 18 months, meaning the slowing in the rate of growth of inflation, has come from goods. So if we think about the economy in two sectors of services, which comprises the vast majority of the economy, and then goods, or think of it, things and stuff we buy, a lot of that disinflation has actually been driven by falling prices or deflation among goods prices. And a lot of that was due within the U.S., the economic reopening after COVID, people started spending a lot more money on services and experiences rather than stuff, if you will. So we saw a decent drop off in demand for goods and therefore some falling prices. But one of the things that's been a little bit underappreciated probably is that economic activity outside the U.S. has been somewhat stagnant in pretty large areas, namely within Europe, places like Germany, and then certainly China, that have heavy manufacturing bases, right, or producing the goods, and the demand for goods is much higher proportionally in their economies relative to the U.S. And I mention all that because looking forward now, we're seeing some signs of stabilization outside the U.S. from an economic perspective. And to the extent we get that stabilization and maybe an uptick in demand for goods, then the deflation that we've been seeing here in the U.S. may stop, right? We might see a floor under good prices and perhaps a tick higher. So, certainly in a vacuum, it looks like the outlook for goods prices may turn up a little bit here, maybe over the next 6 to 9 months. So it'll be important to see what happens on the services side. But when we think about goods, again, that's been driving a lot of the disinflation, it may no longer be a tailwind for inflation coming down that it's been over the past 12 to 15 months. So it would be certainly interesting to see how that unfolds. It's something we're paying keen attention to. With that said, if we skip ahead here, we'll talk a little bit about markets. So I'll focus on the top chart to the right here. We're showing major asset classes from top to bottom. And if we think about things from an equity perspective, in the first three rows, you see U.S. international emerging market equities where the Q1 returns are here in green. And the absolute and relative returns were quite similar to what we saw in Q4, where U.S. equities were up almost double digits, followed by international and then emerging market equities. As I mentioned, they took the worse than expected inflation data relatively in stride, whereas bonds on the other side did not. Again, inflation put a little bit of upward pressure on interest rates and in turn downward pressure on bond prices. So you can see the broad investment grade bond market here down around 1%. Now, as far as some of the other asset classes within the two respective funds, you can see here bank loans, an asset class that was added at the end of the last fiscal year, were up about 2.5% during the quarter. We've seen some pretty strong returns over the first three quarters they've been in the portfolio. During the quarter, again, these have no interest rate sensitivity or duration risk, so rising rates don't really impact the returns, coupled with the fact that markets or equity markets were pretty strong, drove a pretty good environment for bank loans during the quarter. And then finally, the data aren't on this page, but as we'll see here in just a couple minutes, we did continue to see downward pressure on real estate. The returns were less bad than they were in Q4, but infrastructure posted another strong quarter, pretty much offsetting all the weakness that we saw in real estate. And I'll talk more about later on how the transition from the old policy of kind of 50-50 between the two asset classes to the new one of 70-30, how that's going, and when we expect to fully be there. The last page I want to mention quickly here, or the last thing it rather, is really an update to one of the charts that we showed in our sort of outlook commentary at the last meeting, namely that when we take a step back, we talked a lot about how expectations seemed to be reasonably high from both a economic and market perspective heading into the year, right? So in other words, there'd be a higher bar to clear than we saw at the beginning of say 2023 after the poor 2022 for the data to, you know, rather meet or exceed and then be helpful to markets. And at the same time, valuations, which we're showing on the bottom chart here with the forward price to earnings ratio for the US equity market, we're on the higher end of what we've seen over the past, you can see 10-year average here and 20-year average. So these two respective numbers are those two respective averages. And this is where we ended up at the end of March. So in our opinion, even though valuation is not a great timing tool in the short term, because what's expensive can become more expensive and certainly vice versa. But given the high expectations that if the data start not to come in line with expectations, or say come in a little bit below expectations, then that could make things a little susceptible. So right now, we still have that same viewpoint despite the strong market we've seen so far this year. You know, we try not to be dogmatic about these things, but again, with the valuations as elevated as they are, again, we think things could be a little bit more susceptible than they would be had valuations been, say, in line with their respective averages, and we're obviously more cheaply trading than they are right now. So given that, if we jump into the funds, I wanted to mention that last chart for some commentary around some of the changes that we made during the quarter. And we can see at a high level, from a qualitative perspective, some notes on the pension here. So we'll talk more about the pension in a little bit more detail than the OPEB, because the investments mirror each other. So the commentary will largely be the same. So we'll run through the pension and then just spend a couple quick minutes on the OPEB before we look at the April results. So as far as some observations for the pension, you can see we ended the quarter at about $164 million, just shy of that. There was a Q1 net investment change, or think about that as the appreciation of the underlying assets, a little north of $8 million, and a return of 5.2%, which was in line with the policy index benchmark return of 5.2%. And a similar story for the fiscal year, with the numbers being a little bit higher, namely that the net investment change pretty much about double what we saw in Q1, and then the return of about 11.2%, pretty much in line with the policy. So I'll talk more about where we stand from a fiscal year perspective when we get to the April update. As far as what was helpful during the quarter for the fund relative to the benchmark, there are a few things here under positive attribution. First, asset allocation. So we were running an underweight to real estate and an overweight to infrastructure as we migrate to that new policy target. You'd see some active equity managers did well on a respective basis compared to their benchmark. And then Wilmington Trust within fixed income posted a nice relative return as well. What offset those to some degree was non-US equity. It's a structure here. So, you know, what does that mean? We have a slight overweight to emerging markets within the non-US equity space due to their valuations. We believe they're trading extremely cheaply relative to the broad non-US equity market. But as I showed a second ago, emerging markets lagged a little bit, so that was a little bit of a headwind. And then Clarion, the real estate manager, they were behind their respective benchmark by about 30 basis points during the quarter. And then finally, the infrastructure funding. So again, sort of this migration from the old policy of 50-50 to a new 70-30 infrastructure to real estate. We made or got closer to that ultimate 70-30, and I'll show you the allocations at the end of April here in just a few minutes. But that continues to be a transition, and we expect to get to that ultimate relative split probably by the end of the year, hopefully sooner, but it will depend certainly on the market environment. As far as some of the data now, we'll start things out at a high level and then get a little bit more granular. But you can see the breakdown of where we began the quarter or the calendar year up top here at $155 million or $155.5 million. And then how we got to where we ended up at 163.75. So the net investment change driving the bulk of that increase of about $8.3 million. The returns are here in the middle of the page. We'll tackle these more in more detail here in just a minute when we look at them from a peer perspective. But always want to note at the bottom table, the asset allocation versus the target, you see all the permissible asset classes in left here listed, their current allocations. And I'll talk more about, you know, where things stand relative to policy when we look at the April update, given its more recent data. But always important to note that all of the respective asset classes are within their permissible ranges. needs a yes up and down the board here. So in other words, the asset allocation is in compliance with the council approved IPS at the end of Q1. As far as some of the changes made during the quarter, did want to mention these. There's a little bit more activity than normal for a couple reasons. Number one, if you recall our conversation in February, we mentioned that if markets continued to get ground, we were going to be implementing a more disciplined rebalancing approach given some of the concerns on the outlook and valuations I spoke to earlier. So we did put in some partial redemptions across the board within equities. You know, if we add all these up, it comes about just shy of $4.5 million. In turn, that money was partially rebalanced into fixed income given interest rates move higher, you know, meaning a more positive outlook for fixed income given higher rates. But most importantly, funded some cash here. You can see down below at about $1 million in anticipation of a reimbursement or withdrawal from both pension and the OPEB before the end of the fiscal year to reimburse the county. So in other words, we were trimming things as things moved higher, rebalancing a little bit, and also funding cash in anticipation that money would be withdrawn. So we want to do that obviously when markets are grinding higher, moving higher, as opposed to having to sell something at the wrong time. In other words, after it's declined, because we know that we're going to need that draw within the portfolio. As far as the returns, we look at them a little bit more deeply here at a total fund level, and then we'll look at some of the underlying investments as well. As you all may recall, we use a third-party platform to generate these reports called Investment Metrics, and a lot of other investment advisors use it as well. But it gives us a nice opportunity here to compare and contrast how the pension and OPEB are doing relative to peers here, meaning other public defined benefit funds in this universe. So you can see all the respective periods here across the bottom of the chart above. But the key data are really in these last three rows. So the top row shows the universe size, where you can see kind of ranges from just under 600 to a little bit more than 450 across each time period. So in other words, it's pretty good sample size to draw some conclusions. And then those bottom two rows here show the returns for the fund up top, and then that policy index benchmark. So you can see the 5252 I mentioned earlier for Q1. And then the peer rankings are the numbers in parentheses here, where you can see the 5.2 here was better than the median of these 576 plans within the universe. So it was in the top 42%. In other words, lower numbers in parentheses are better from a peer perspective. And as you work away from left to right, it's fairly consistent across all major time periods here, kind of being in that top third, if you will, where the one standout is really that three-year period, right? So what do we know about the three-year period? Well, that encompasses 2022, right? The very poor market environment for equities and fixed income. And like we've talked about with you all repeatedly in the past, you know, what we're trying to do is really capture most, if not all, that upside, but then really protect on the downside for really a couple reasons, right? Number one, the less you lose, the easier it is to recover what you've lost. And number two, from an actuarial perspective, even though Chiron is doing some asset smoothing already, to the extent that we can smooth the assets even more so via returns, and it should give you a little bit more certainty from a contribution perspective. In other words, a little bit more budgetary certainty that yearly contribution isn't oscillating and jumping around over time. So more stability in contributions if we can get, you know, not just the lower highs, but also more importantly, those higher lows over time. So with that said, just want to make a couple comments on the underlying funds here. Oops, there we go. So on these pages, what we're showing in brown is you'd see the word composite, right? So think about this of a weighted average return of everything that would fall underneath it. So here's the total fund again. So all of these data are what was on the peer page a second ago. And then anytime you see another brown row, again, it says composite. It's really just synonymous with asset class. So the total equity composite would be a weighted average of U.S. global non-U.S. equities, largely in line with the benchmark during the quarter. Really not too much to speak of here. What I really wanted to focus on was the real estate and infrastructure to give you more up-to-date detail where things stand and how the funds perform. So On the real estate side, as I spoke about a few minutes ago, we saw Clarion down just a shade under 3% during the quarter. Again, returns have become less bad, if you will, from a real estate perspective. They're around negative 5 or so in Q4. From a real estate outlook, if you will, we still think we're going to continue to see some negative returns probably in Q2, maybe Q3, as the market tries to find an ultimate bottom here. But like we talked about before, we've been getting money back from this investment really going on probably 2 years now in anticipation of further weakness. You can see as a percentage of the overall fund, we're down at about 3.5% here. And then from the infrastructure side, we're up at 5.3 at the end of the quarter. There was a contribution made on April 1st. So as I'll show you here in a second, we're still around this 3.6 for real estate, but now north of 6 for infrastructure. So kind of halfway to where we need to ultimately be from that newly approved policy. Now, as far as the infrastructure returns themselves, you see JP Morgan here up about 2.7% during the quarter, really continuing to post sort of those steady gains of kind of 2 to 2.5% or so. This one somewhat on the higher end, really quarter in and quarter out as that infrastructure space, there's the demand for those assets and the money flowing into the asset class via various fiscal policies across the world, certainly in the U.S. as well, supporting a lot of the asset prices in that area and allowing JP Morgan here to post those steady gains that we've seen since it's been in the fund going on about 2.25 years now, up around a little north of 10% over that time. As far as the bank loan composite here, again, new asset class that the committee and council approved towards the end of the last fiscal year. Our returns have been pretty strong, not just on an absolute basis, but certainly a relative basis from Aristotle, the manager we're using to implement the allocation to the asset class, up around 9.5% since the end of the last fiscal year, which is when the initial allocation was made in the pension and the OPEB. And then finally, like I talked about a second ago, when we look at fixed income, the policy, if you will, you see down 20 basis points here. So it's different than the number I talked about in the market environment because the policy index benchmark for the pension and the OPEB has less interest rate risk. It has a lower duration. So as rates rose during the quarter, this benchmark is less susceptible to those increasing rates, given the less interest rate sensitivity. That's why the return was about 60 basis points better, albeit still negative. Now, on a relative basis, you can see the returns were flat, so slight outperformance there, driven by Wilmington Trust here, about 20 basis points ahead. So if we think about this somewhat as an accounting identity, with them being 20 basis points ahead and the composite the same number, then the other two managers in aggregate were also roughly flat. In other words, about 20 basis points ahead of that policy. Let me pause there quickly. We're running on a bit here, see if there are any comments or questions before we tackle the OPEB quickly and then get into the April numbers.
Pat, I know that we changed our real estate allocation, what seems like, I guess, a year ago. It's just taken time to liquidate some of that and move it to infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You said it's going to take us to the end of the year to get where we all want to get to that 30-70 split. Is there any recommendations after we finally get there to even cut it more?
You know, I think we should revisit that at the time, Gina, because, you know, if we get there, say, at the end of September or even at the end of December, it depends on what the real estate market looks at that point, because, you know, we've seen valuations come down now around 20% or so. So from a long-term perspective, we still think there's a place for real estate. You know, we've seen these unfortunate drawdowns in the past. But I think at that point, we should have that discussion around that. I would hesitate to do it now because, in essence, we couldn't get there more quickly than we are at the current moment. Does that make sense?
It takes time. No, I understand it takes time.
Yeah.
I just want to put that out there that when should we put that on the agenda to discuss? Do we want to go any further with that and what your thoughts are? I understand it's probably going to be in the end of this year, but I just want to throw that out there.
I think that could be a good agenda item to discuss perhaps at the November meeting when we're in person. But we could certainly, you know, you and I could talk offline before August to see if it's worth bringing up prior to that.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. right. Now, as it relates to the OPEB, as I mentioned earlier, we could walk through this pretty quickly. I'll skip over this page. I'll talk about the numbers up top in a second, but my comments are related to attribution and looking ahead here are largely the same. So from a high-level perspective, you can see that we began the quarter or the calendar year there just a little north of $63 million for the OPEB, and then we had a net investment change of just shy of $3.3 million. So that's pretty much the change in the beginning and ending value for the OPEB. The returns, as I mentioned earlier on, are going to mimic the pension. The underlying investments mirror each other because there are our best ideas across the respective asset classes, and the asset allocation targets are the same, given the assumed rate of returns for each plan are the same as well. So we'll look at these more quickly, or excuse me, in more detail in just a second from a peer perspective. But as far as the asset allocation, same things follow suit as it relates to everything is within its permissible range. You can see on the right per the IPS. So again, like the pension, everything is in compliance. As it relates to the changes to the quarter, again, everything follows suit. Obviously, the numbers, if you will, are on a smaller scale, given the OPEB isn't as large as the pension, but the themes are comparable. Specifically, we were partially redeeming assets from equities as they rose towards the end of the quarter, using those funds, which were just shy of about $2 million, to rebalance slightly back into fixed income, and then add funds to the money market fund again, trying to trim things after they rise. In other words, just sell high and mitigate that risk that we're going to have to sell something after it's declined to meet a disbursement or withdrawal need that we know is upcoming. So in fact, Gina let me know earlier today, the respective amounts that we'll be needing, we already have it covered. So again, we won't have to take that risk that over the next 6 weeks or so, if the markets reverse course, having to raise that cash at the wrong time, in other words, sell something after it's declined to meet those needs. And then finally, from a peer perspective, not too much to comment on here other than the pension, but just wanted to show you the data. Similar story here where we're comparing things to other public defined benefit funds. And then the key data on the bottom here where the quarter fiscal 1 year, pretty comparable 3 year with the pension. And then the 5-10 year kind of oscillating between that top quintile and top third. So the long and short of it, Q1, again, pretty strong market environment, a little stronger than we certainly would have suspected given our comments earlier this year. But given some asset allocation decisions and the underlying managers performing reasonably well, we're able to keep pace with that policy index benchmark. So with that said, I'll pause once more to see if there are any more questions, but then we can just quickly look at the April numbers and I'll make some comments around May. As I mentioned, it's been a very different environment, but I'll pause again before shifting gears. Okay. So let me maximize this a little bit. Here we go. So as I mentioned earlier, April was very different than Q1. Specifically, we did see some weakness in equity prices as the inflation data continued to come in a little worse than expected. Not only did fixed income continue to post negative returns given an uptick in rates, but equities finally seemed to take notice of that data. So what we saw during the quarter to date, again, this is April, and I'll make more comments on what we've seen more recently here in just a minute, but the quarter to date number was down 2.5%. About 10 basis points ahead of that policy index return, largely driven in the equity space, particularly the global equity managers. You can see here that we're ahead of their respective benchmarks by about 80 basis points. If we look at that real estate allocation per your comment, Gina, a second ago, we're at 3.5% now at the end of April. So the target has been adjusted. We're going to do it in percentage point increments just for simplicity here. But we're, we're about, three quarters of the way to that 3%, right, from the 5 to the 3. So, I say year end because, we don't know, but it certainly would seem that given where things stand now, we could be there sooner. From the infrastructure side of the equation, again, we don't have any of the data yet, but did want to show, as I spoke to earlier, that contribution was made on April 1st. So now instead of being what I think was 5.3%, at the end of Q1, at the end of April, was a little north of 6%. So we're, incrementally getting to where we need to be there. So the other thing I wanted to mention here quickly if we circle back up to the first page and look at the fiscal year, at the end of April, you can see 8.4% relative to that policy 8.3. This quarter-to-date number now, given what we've seen so far here in May, is up around 1%. So instead of being down 3.5, it's up around 1, given the strong rebound we've seen in both equities and fixed income. So from a fiscal year-to-date perspective, we're around 12.3. So we'll call it, do the math here quickly, 5.5 percentage points above that assumed rate of return as we sit here this morning with about 6 weeks left to go. And the same follows suit for the OPEB. So to wrap up, as I mentioned, you know, at our last meeting and throughout my commentary around what took place in Q1, whether it be markets or whether it be the changes being made, you know, we continue to be positioned a little bit more defensively. I think you can illustrate that here. You see the total equity allocation about a percentage point below that policy target. So in other words, you know, an underweight to the most cyclical or volatile asset class within the portfolio or each respective portfolio. And if, as markets have reversed course here in May, if they continue to do so, we're going to continue to be or take a pretty disciplined rebalancing approach, not just to ensure that that cash is there that will be needed to be dispersed, which it is right now, but either rebalance back into fixed income because the interest rates are higher than they were at the beginning of the year, or maybe add a little bit to cash when times are good in anticipation that we know we'll probably need more money in 12 months' time. And we're going to do that when the markets are kind of ramping higher. Again, worst possible scenario would be having to raise cash after the markets have already declined. In other words, sell something after it's fallen and then permanently impair that capital. So with all that said, I will pause once more. Pretty much wraps up my comments about 10:35. I'm sure Gina is smiling. I can't see anybody. If you're not on camera, you're probably smiling too. It's been a shorter meeting, but happy to answer any questions or address any comments you all may have.
So, Pat, I know you mentioned emerging markets earlier as a potential opportunity, but do you feel, you know, fixed income at this point is as good of an opportunity as equity markets over the next year or so as interest rates maybe start to come down?
So as good as an opportunity, I would say it this way. On a relative basis, we think that fixed income is more fairly valued, if you will, than equity markets, given where yields are at. If we look at historically metrics like GDP growth, inflation, the yields on cash, the yields right now are in line with what we would want in other words, you know, compensating us for those metrics. So on a relative basis, I would say yes. In other words, you know, fixed income is fairly valued. We still view equities as slightly overvalued here. So for my comments earlier, if equities continue to grind higher here, we would definitely take that opportunity to rebalance, but not necessarily just have it go into the money market fund, but rebalance into fixed income given how rates have risen.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Any other questions for Mr. Wing? Okay, seeing none. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Additional business. I just want to welcome Lance Rogers. I didn't at the beginning of the meeting. I appreciate you volunteering to be on the committee. You have a strong investment background, and we are going to value your any insight that you have for us. So thank you.
Thank you, and I'm happy to be here. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Thank you. Does anybody have any other additional business? Okay, hearing none, can somebody make a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn. This is Kit.
Thank you, Kit. Second?
Second, Todd.
Second, Todd. All right, all in favor, say aye.
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 All right, we're adjourned. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Pat.
Bye.
You're welcome. Take care.